RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with
Brave New Congress Val
and Beans.
Yes, indeed.
Boring Beans.
Just boring old Beans.
Boring old Beans.
Old with a O-L apostrophe, not like old, like you old wench. It is International Women's Day. I would never do that to you on International Women's Day to call you old.
I wonder... never mind, I'm not even going to say it. I'm going to censor myself.
What?
I was just going to say, I wonder if like I could find somewhere where there were like protests going on or like celebrations of International Women's Day and then like just set up a countertop and start making sandwiches for the men that walk by.
Oh, that'd be amazing. You know, listen, the international, for anybody that's actually using this hashtag and this designated day seriously, after just 2 weeks ago, we had to hear collective screams about how the Hallmark holiday of Valentine's Day is bullshit. Oh, it's funny to me.
Are they going to start making greeting cards for it? Is that what?
Somebody's going to. It's International Women's Day.
I was having a conversation with a dear friend of mine just before we got on the show today. Her name is Brandon. And we were talking about how. And you know what? I should probably save this because Frank and I, before we started the show, were talking about the topics for today. And we're going to talk about this resolution for Ilhan Omar. And we know that we're going to be going on it for a long time because Frank's got a lot of really good ideas and like things to say. So I'm going to hold the conversation that I had until that. And we'll start with some of the lighter fare.
Yeah, let's go to the lighter things, the things that'll make us happy. Let's get happy first.
I went nuts this morning on Twitter, Frank. Nuts. Which hasn't happened in quite a couple, like, you know, in like a week. Because I open up my phone, and you know how like when you first open up Twitter, they have like those moments?
Yes.
Like Twitter moments. And I see this picture of Donald Trump sitting with this Asian woman, or I guess she's Chinese. Is there a distinction between?
She's from the Orient.
Yeah. So she's one of those Oriental women. Which is great, right? She's sitting with him and it says, the headline is, I click on the tweet in there and I see all these people talking about this like it's some big deal. And it says, Trump, the headline is Miami Herald. The outlet that did all that great work on Epstein.
Yeah.
The headline is, Trump cheered Kraft's team to Super Bowl victory with founder of spa where he was busted.
Quite provocative there, Tracy.
And I'm like, oh boy. My initial reaction was like, ooh. And then I start reading the tweets underneath this, right? And seeing what people are saying. And it's like, oh, there was only a matter of time before we connected him to this. Ah, look, he signed this photo with her. Oh, my gosh. This is, you know, all these.
Trump was connected. He's connected to plate tectonics as well and earthquakes.
Well, that was a given.
Yeah.
The earth moves under his feet, doesn't it?
Exactly.
So I'm like, let me read this article and see what's going on here because I have a duty to talk about it if it's something bad, you know? And like, I didn't expect it. I was surprised. I was shocked at it, actually. I was like, wow. So I start reading the article and you know, it starts off innocently enough. And then you get down, let me just read a little bit of it for everybody. It says, seated at a round table littered with party favors and the paper cutout footballs that have become tradition at his annual Super Bowl watch party. President Donald Trump cheered the New England Patriots and his longtime friend, team owner Robert Kraft, to victory over the Los Angeles Rams on February 3rd. Sometime during the party at Trump's West Palm Beach Country Club, the president turned in his chair to look over his right shoulder, smiling for a photo with two women at a table behind him. The woman who snapped the blurry Super Bowl selfie with the president was Li Yang, 45, a self-made entrepreneur from China who started a chain of Asian day spas in South Florida. Over the years, these establishments, many of which operate under the name Tokyo Day Spas, have gained a reputation for offering sexual services. Now, being the person I am, and I'm sure you are, that means nothing. There's been, you know, that just means like, oh, look, that really means nothing.
Yeah.
19 days after Trump and Yang posed together while rooting for the Patriots, authorities would charge Kraft with soliciting prostitution at a spa in Jupiter that Yang had founded more than a decade earlier. And I'm like,
oh,
she founded this place.
My gosh.
And then
the United States government was founded in 1776. Now look at it.
I know. What a difference, right? Yang says she had long since sold Orchids of Asia Day Spa, the massage parlor where authorities say they caught Kraft on camera paying for orals. I'm not going to say it in case it's a kid's show. Morning of January 20th, AFC Championship game, his second visit in 24 hours. Yang, who goes by Cindy, was not charged in the multi-agency anti-human trafficking operation last month that shut down 10 Asian day spas in Florida, none of which are registered to her or her family. What?
Imagine that. What a great, well, crack. So they say they go from the crack reporting of the Epstein case to this complete swing and a miss.
What the hell is this?
And then they go. I guess they needed another hit. They needed another hit. They needed another big hit article. Everybody was talking about that Miami Herald article for a couple of weeks after it was published. And then it's been kind of mum. So I guess they needed something.
Frank, they go on to talk about the fact that her family still owns some spas in South Florida. And they basically insinuate that she's breaking the law and say she's, you know, they've attracted the attention of police.
Uh-oh.
And then they basically, she's a very wealthy supporter of President Trump, and they're going after her because they think that, I mean, how racist is that?
The whole thing is ridiculous.
She's Chinese, so she must be running a spa that gives sexual favors out for money.
First of all, illegal immigration is a huge, huge business. It doesn't have to just do with, you know, countries that are closest to the Mexican-American border. We know that in places like L.A. and elsewhere, there are birthing hotels for people from China, people from Russia. They get here however they want. Every nail salon in my area is staffed by strictly Chinese and Korean people. They all show up in the same van. They're all together.
You go in and get your nails done?
No, well, you know, I used to work next to a nail salon, so I was in a pharmacy next to a nail salon. But beyond that, you know, you date girls, you know what their habits are. They tell you about the places they go to, and you know what these things are all about. I mean, it's not very many people are here legally. They overstay visas. The whole thing with this Kraft situation, I've always, just from the beginning, been waiting to hear of whether or not the people involved in these lewd acts were children, if they were underage. Aside from that, this is so commonplace. I don't even know what the hell to even say to anything anymore.
Doesn't the left want to decriminalize sex work?
Yeah, but then again, listen, you talk about the alliances and the allegiances and the compacts that are made between the left for, you know, political, you know, I don't know, gratification in the immediate. This is one of them, to make a big deal about this when they're such champions. They're champions of the hand job. And now, you know.
By the way, Frank, I wouldn't have judged you if you did get your nails done. A lot of men get manicures and pedicures.
No, I
and, their eyebrows done.
I have a problem. I bite mine off. I don't bite my nails. I bite the skin around my nails.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I should probably. It's all nervous. It's all nerves.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely a nervous thing for sure.
Yeah.
I grew up in New York where the Guido hair was like a thing, and like all the guys were getting their eyebrows done when I was younger in these places. All of them. You've never seen that? Like Jim Tan laundry? Come on.
Yeah, no. I have friends that get their eyebrows shaped up and stuff like that. As long as I don't have a unibrow, I don't really care. So I make sure.
Doesn't bother ladies. You have a lot of fans, Frank.
Well, I don't have the genetics for the unibrow, thank God. So I've always just monitored that. I was like, what the hell's going on? Anything? Nothing. Okay, good. Other than that, it's whatever.
So I was infuriated by this piece. I mean, what are they even trying to say? It's so sick. and I won't stop. This needs attention. Like, I feel like everybody needs to be talking about this right now. Because
it is infuriating. That is infuriating. But you want to talk about what people have left and what were who is watching the Cohen hearings? Who is still dialed into that? I'm not. I'm sure people who have, you know, they have the responsibility to report on stuff like that. They have to. But it is all of this is just so irrelevant. And to hear people like Ken Starr say the United States presidents should be able to be indicted. Think about what somebody saying something like that is really putting forth to the public. They're saying that even though we have most of the government, most of our elected leaders completely knee deep in investigations and probes and nonsense that has tied them up from actually serving American interests just so that they can put on a political show for people in front of cameras and all that stuff. Now they're saying that the entirety of American governance should be able to be tied up by opposition to whoever's in office at that time, to be tied up into fake and phony investigations and all these motions to be under the guise of trying to root out criminality as if these people really care about being criminal.
It makes me laugh, to be honest, because actually Dan Bongino did a podcast, yes, his podcast yesterday, where he went over Joe Biden and his connections to like the Chinese and all that, and like how he had to go through CFIUS. Because his son and John Kerry's son ran this company, and there was like obvious pay to play going on. And like, I wonder if we're going to all investigate them for their business dealings and their ownership of these companies. Like, Trump didn't even make a business deal. It's so hypocritical. They're digging their own grave, Frank. As a matter of fact, so much so that we just got an article out of Fox News today. Cohen meets with Adam Schiff for 10 hours. Before House Oversight Committee hearing. He's meeting with, he traveled to New York four times to meet with him for over 10 hours immediately before last month's public testimony, according to two sources familiar with the matter. So should we fudge rule this or what?
I don't know. I don't know if you should even fudge rule it, because in that first day of testimony.
He said it.
In the 10 minute, it's funny because I only watched for 10 minutes, but I caught so much in the 10 minutes that I watched that I'm seeing this guy pretty much admit that he was coordinating his schedules and everything with Democrats.
Yeah,
he was in contact constantly with Democrats. It was like the Christine Ford performance all over again.
I didn't see an envelope being passed though. To his attorneys behind the scenes by like Sheila Jackson Lee or like anyone like that. However, interesting to note that like right after all this, we started hearing that his attorneys had been asking Donald Trump for a pardon and had been denied. And all of a sudden, he's Trump's biggest enemy.
Nah. And he's willing to say whatever the hell. Whatever.
Listen.
Because no matter what, he's going to jail for at least 4 years.
I'm so excited for Sater's testimony. And I started doing some digging the other day. And I got so down the rabbit hole with this story that I was working on that connects. You know how during the testimony, they talked about Cohen and how he had taken that contract with that bank from Kazakhstan?
Yeah.
Well, Felix Sater also was working for that bank. And the former CEO of that bank embezzled billions of dollars. And now the owners of the bank now are going after that money to try and get it back. And Felix Sater had been called in to testify or give a deposition in New York in one of these investigations that are going on. And it's interesting. They say that that Cohen was introduced to these guys through a friend. And if you remember, this is tying back into General Flynn as I go along, Frank, because remember there was a letter that Sater authored alongside someone else and Cohen hand delivered it to Michael Flynn a week before he resigned.
I seem to remember something like that, but can you refresh me?
So it was a letter about how best to, you know, deal with like relieving sanctions on Russia or, you know, something like that. And it all ties back in to this bank. It's really weird and it's so complicated. And there are so many names and all these people, like there are all these pictures, like right after they started raiding Cohen's stuff, he's pictured outside of in New York having this meeting with all of these people. And one of the people is one of the people that tried to set up the meeting with Don Jr. and Veselnitskaya. It's like very deep and confusing, and I'm still trying to sort it all out, but there's something big here. I just know it.
And when is this hearing scheduled for?
The 14th.
14th of March, the day before the Ides.
The day before the Ides. Did you hear Brennan?
No.
Brennan was on, and he said that, like, even though he doesn't know anything about it.
I don't know anything about it. I don't have any insider information.
I have a face made of granite.
He should have been that gargoyle that they put in Detroit Airport. Did you see that?
Yeah, he's got this ridiculously gruff, mean face. And then he starts speaking and he's just like,
he's like a flowery little man, isn't he?
I don't like him. I don't like him at all. Don't like him at all.
We'll get into Stelter and you can take out your anger on him.
They irk me, Tracy.
Irk. Brennan was on and he was saying that Mueller would likely be dropping a bunch of indictments today to close up his investigation and that he wouldn't wait until next week because he wouldn't want to do it on the Ides of March.
Oh, get the hell out of here. How poetic these freaks are.
It was a corpus of intelligence, Frank, didn't you know?
Oh my gosh. He wouldn't want to do it on the Ides of March. It would be too symbolic.
Seriously. Isn't that crazy?
Wouldn't you want that to happen? Wouldn't that be, I mean, all they're doing right now is, you just brought up the whole thing with the rub and tug parlors in Florida. All they're looking for is some sensational headline. Wouldn't that be something they would root for? That Mueller drops all these last minute indictments or whatever the hell they are. On the Ides of March. Oh, it was the day it finally all came down. It's just so stupid.
Well, we go from Brennan to Brian Stelter.
Oh, that one. What the hell did that guy say now?
He's beside himself. He doesn't know how to handle this. Like, to watch these people twist themselves into pretzels, as we often say on this podcast, to try to somehow spin this narrative, like that the Mueller again.
I wonder what Brian Stelter is doing for International Women's Day. I wonder what he's doing for it.
He's getting his eyebrows done.
That's it. He's getting his eyebrows done. He's getting the horseshoe haircut trimmed.
No, hair. Just one.
Gotta get my hair trimmed. Hey, it's this, I can't, I just can't. He really has this gremlin. He's the bat boy. He's the bat boy that was found in the cave in the National Enquirer years ago. All grown up. He's got a big boy job and everything. You ever see the Bat Boy?
Yes.
I remember that I was a little kid when they first published that ridiculous picture of the Bat Boy found in a cave. It's Brian Stelter all grown up.
Oh my gosh.
I've got a job now, Mom.
You know, Mark Dice stole your shtick.
Yeah. Well, listen, all you got to do is your best Mickey Mouse impression and anybody can do Brian Stelter. And then all you have to do is you have to be paranoid and you just have to see ghosts all around you and say, you know, think that there's just something, you're onto something and you're always, the thing about him that is most entertaining is that he thinks that he's onto something. And you watch this brain really work and the gears are grinding in there somehow. And he's trying to decipher what's going on around him. And he thinks he's onto something, but he sounds like a twit. That's all it is. So that's what's most entertaining about Brian Stelter.
Watching them try to, like, watching them after 2 years of holding up Mueller as a pillar of everything good and just in the world. And start to say, he just didn't go far enough.
Or when they say that he's not, you know, they know that pretty much nothing is coming out of this Mueller probe or Mueller probe that they've been praying for, that they're, you know, the hashtag Mueller's on the way, or, you know, they put Mueller on these posts, these poster boards with him dressed as Superman or something like that. He's coming to save us from Trump. He's coming to save us from the other civilians that we have to share this country with that actually had a voice in the election, that we didn't want them to have a voice. And because they had a voice and we are completely wrong about everything, we have to believe that there was some kind of scheme that went, that had to go on, because how could we ever be wrong about this? Well, now that it's not coming to fruition the way that they wanted it to, now we have to go and we have to listen to people like Brian Stelter say, well, he lies to us all the time. Why should, you know, yep. it's up to us to, we have to go and follow this to its rightful conclusion. He's never told us the truth about anything. Why should we stay here and just accept this as what it is? You know, so now the spin is, did we ever really have a choice but to look into this? I mean, we are dealing with a prolific liar. We never lie. You know, the last 15 classes of Congress never lied. They didn't lie about, you know, every war that was, it's been launched in the last 20 years in the Eastern Hemisphere. They don't lie about anything. You know, John Brennan didn't lie about spying.
Neither did Clapper. Clapper says, I just misunderstood the question.
Right. Yeah. Brennan was spying on Congress and Clapper was spying on everyone. And these people, oh my God. And they're all writing books now. Great.
I can't wait to see what Seth Abramson has to say. You know who Seth Abramson is?
I know his name. He keeps getting brought up. Remind
me. He's crazy. He's this crazy guy on the left who has been spinning this ridiculous conspiracy theory. And I hate using that word, but this is one time when it really is a conspiracy theory about what's been going on and how Mueller is going to put, like, or Mueller, whatever you want to call him, is going to put like the nail in the coffin of Trump and to take him down. And he has like a new excuse every time what he's told everyone that follows him, which is like 500,000 or 600,000 people in the past, doesn't happen. He comes up with like some new excuse for why. He wrote a book about Spygate. He's a professor. He was actually brought in to teach a course. I did a video about him and I guess somebody alerted him to it. And he dedicated 30 something tweets to me.
I remember. Okay. That's how I know him, because I remember you guys had a heated interchange.
No, excuse me. I couldn't have an interchange with him because he blocked me.
Oh, so he was just spouting off about you.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's what it was. I don't know much more about him outside of that.
I was flattered.
You should be.
I am. Even Dan Bongino doesn't get that whole big thing. I did.
Got you, Dan. I'd love to meet Dan. I would love to have Dan in this studio over here, have him in for a show if he ever comes back, you know, to New York for a visit.
It would be great if he would do stuff like that, but I don't think he will.
Why? You think it's just too busy, or?
Well, I mean, he works for Fox News now, so.
Okay. Maybe a Skype call one day. Who knows?
Maybe. What was the next thing I wanted to go? Oh, let's talk quickly before we get into Omar for the last half hour or so, because we're at 2:23 minutes. Let's talk about, did you watch the interview with Tim Pool and Jack and his?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I was talking to Tim right before he went live with Rogan. I didn't even know he was scheduled for Rogan that day. I got in touch with Tim to see if he wants to come on the show, come in the studio again, because we did a handful of broadcasts together in studio. I engineered some of the podcasts, the original podcast he was doing on his channel in 2016. In fact, the night before he went to Sweden to start covering Malmo and all of the no-go zones and what the impact on all of this this mass migration had been on the country and the culture, he was in this studio. That was the last time he was hanging out with us. And you know,
I had no idea that you had like a relationship with Tim Pool.
Well, it's casual. It's not like we're best friends. We text at night.
No, but he was there in your building. Like,
We hung out on the roof, and I think we watched the debate, one of the presidential debates together. We had a lot of fun. But I wanted him to come in again, and he said he'll Skype in at the end of the month. 2 hours later, I get a text message from a buddy of mine with a live link, And it's Tim Pool on there with Jack Dorsey, that vajayjay woman. And man, oh, man.
He did. Listen, I don't agree with a lot of his politics. Like, I listened to him on Dave Rubin, and I really didn't know who he was. I've heard of him, but I didn't know who he was, what he stood for, whatever. My first experience of Tim Pool was this show on the Joe Rogan podcast. So I'm listening to him, and I'm like, wow, this guy is good. Now, a couple things that I would have said that he didn't say, but of course, when you're sitting there in the heat of the moment, you don't think of these things. But I was like, wow. And then I listened to him on Dave Rubin, and I was like, eh, I don't really like this. I don't really like that. But he's a good guy. I mean, he's a really good guy.
No, Tracy, he is, doesn't hide his liberalism. But the thing is that he's a very honest journalist. And he's one of those people like you, him, a few others, you know, Corey Diggs and a few other people. You know, there are great people out there that do independent, honest work. Yeah. Regardless of what their personal politics are, you can get past that as long as everybody agrees on it. Like Michael Tracy, for example, I want to get Michael Tracy on the show. He's another liberal, and I think he's done work with the Young Turks and Vice, but I think he's mostly independent now. But everybody agrees on the hypocrisy we see in the news and on the ultimate and the utmost what free speech means. And even if you believe in the concept of hate speech or not, it falls under the umbrella of free speech. And if we don't have that and we're not able to express even more our most controversial ideas in a public forum for real dissecting and dialectic, then we do not have a free society. These people, regardless of their personal politics on whatever kind of wedge issues of the day, they agree on these fundamental tenets of our society, which is what makes them, which is what people, what makes people label people like Tim Pool as alt-right.
Oh, right. I know, which is ridiculous. And you know, another journalist I have to give a shout out to, another outlet that's progressive in politically, but does amazingly unbiased and straightforward work. Disobedient Media, like Elizabeth Lee Voss and Will Chamberlain. No, I'm getting it wrong. I forget his name. It's Will something.
I know Voss.
She's great.
I covered one of her threads before on Twitter. She is great.
She's just a great journalist. I mean, there are some of them out there that, like, really, like you're saying. And, like, I'm listening, and one of the themes I almost felt like was a dog whistle for the left throughout the if you haven't seen it, you gotta watch this really interesting, what was it, like 3 hours almost?
Yeah.
Of Joe Rogan, who doesn't really say much, and when he does, it's like, dude, just stop. You don't have anything valuable here at all. But, like, they keep saying, Jack and his lawyer lady keep saying, oh, well, they brought it to us, our attention. And she talks really low like this. And so,
I hate it.
Listen, right. So one of the things that we've been doing at Twitter is signaling to all the people on the left that the only way we know that something's going wrong is if we're alerted to it by users. So please report things.
Yeah, they all have their research, and you know they make themselves into the meme of the NPC face with the huge brain, like they have their weight of the world. There's Jack Dorsey, the little man with a really great idea who now has to figure out how to perfect human interaction.
Yeah.
No, let people talk. If it's a death threat, we know about it. If it's just people who are annoyed by those around them who don't see the world the same way, you created a block option. You created a mute option, which is like a light blocking. Why are we getting into this? Why have they put so much importance on them, and they mask all of their bias with all this technical crap?
Well, the funny thing is, too, is that, like, I feel like Jack was utter, like, I feel like he's a puppet. And he has a bunch of people with strings holding him up, and he wants to do certain things that he can't do, or he just is really that naive to the fact that their platform has. He even said that they have been responsible for creating bubbles, and the research that they've done has shown that people on the left will really only follow people on the left, but people on the right follow everybody.
Yeah. And they create, because they keep creating these new algorithms and these new, they keep, putting all these new practices into play. that really do keep people on their side of the gym unless they go and try to seek out, willfully seek out. They'll never stumble upon anything that is not within their normal tastes. That's just the whole thing there. They create these bubbles, and it just goes to show the willingness of people on the right, not Republicans, just people who don't identify with this crazy progressive nonsense. It just goes to show the willingness of people to try to see the full story and see what really shakes out in the arena of common sense. You know, you don't have to be a PhD to have these conversations.
Yeah, and, you know, healthy debate without... Basically, what I was getting at is that they were basically dog whistling to the left throughout this entire interview that if enough people report something, they're taking action on it regardless.
Right.
And, like, that's what they were basically saying. And nobody picked up on the fact that they kept saying, well, they reported it. It was reported. It was reported. It was reported.
Yeah, it's reported. And what they keep saying? They keep saying that what we were trying to do is targeted attacks, and they wanted to make sure that dogpiling didn't happen. They're pretty much telling people, as long as you dogpile on somebody, we'll take action.
Right, exactly. The exact opposite. And she, you know, the learn to code. So one of the things that we noticed when we were doing our research is that there was learn to code, there were death threats, there were veiled threats, and then there was just learn to code.
None of what she bullshit. She referenced that day of the rope.
Mm-hmm.
thing, which is for anybody to say, to even, it's so disingenuous to go out there and say that people were putting out veiled death threats of people who were to journalists who had just lost their jobs. No, Day of the Rope is a reference of their professional demise. Like when you have, over the course of a couple of weeks, all these publications and all these websites shutting down, sizing down their staff because their product is no longer wanted or needed or can be trusted anymore. Day of the Rope is a way of saying, look, you have met the rightful professional demise for the games that you were playing and for your hubris in thinking that you were at the top of your game and everybody around you, all the coal miners that you told, well, hey, listen, get with the times, learn to code. Stop trying to swing an axe for the rest of your life. Now you are at the other end of it. And they went and they interpreted it because she kept bringing up context as well. Well, it's also very, very easy to see now that context is only reserved for the left.
Yeah, that is the context word. Is their way to justify banning anybody on the right.
Right. Context is only reserved for the left. Day of the Rope, it was a veiled threat. Yeah, okay, you just lost your job, but your hell's not over yet. Now I'm going to kill you. That makes a lot of sense.
And basically she was saying, like, it was thousands and thousands and thousands of people coming after these, you know, journalists all at once. And it's not fun. It's really not fun.
Evaders. They're ban evaders.
They were ban evaders,
Ban evaders. They've been evading bans. They're a motley crew. They're a real motley crew.
Those are people that had been banned before and recreated other accounts to get around the ban. Like, I just wanted to jump through the screen and be like, you entitled little.
Yep. Like I said, I said it on my show because I went into that interview with some depth on Wednesday night. Said that the worst thing that could have ever happened to me in my life is to be alone in a room with that woman and listen to her eat a salad.
Or
watch her eat a salad, especially if she's enjoying herself and she thinks the salad is very yummy. Then I would be equally upset that she's enjoying herself.
I'm just going to say too, Frank, like, outside of salads, whenever anybody says to you, that's a really good question. Right. That's a great point. They don't mean it.
You're so smart.
Yeah.
You know, I really appreciate the question because it's really, I've been waiting for somebody to ask me things, you know, questions that I can really use my brain muscles to answer. Thank you for asking a question like that, because my brain has been, I've been looking for a challenge, and this might be something that, you know, I don't know, gives me just a little bit of work, you know, because everybody's just so far beneath me.
Did you feel like Jack was more genuine and, like, sincerely cared about, like, some of the topics they were talking about? Because I did.
I I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know if anything about these people are really genuine. I think that it's just a whole different ball game when you're brought back in. First of all, Rogan is cleaning up a mess that he made for himself. Mm-hmm. He was ratioed bad on YouTube for what he did with Dorsey's appearance a couple of weeks ago, where it was just he and Rogan, and he was allowed to spout all of the corporate talking points without any pushback.
Yeah.
He got a lot of problems with that. So he's cleaning up a mess. That's number one. Number two, he brought in his champion to ask all the questions and put the screws to Twitter, and that was Tim Pool. And good on him for that, because Tim did not back down.
No, he did great.
In that respect, because there was actually a real honest pressing being done in this setting, I wouldn't say that Jack's views of anything had changed, but his demeanor definitely changed. You can't sit there in the same kind of comfortable setting that you had when it was just one-on-one with Lefty Rogan. So you can't do that. So I just think that the just reactions and all of the PR that was being done, the body language, that just is going to naturally change.
Here, what I saw is that he really genuinely didn't understand how the policy about misnaming or misgendering was an ideologically biased policy. And Tim really went to great lengths to explain that. And then I thought that the grains of sand analogy he used was really, really poignant. Like, they kept saying, this is a mistake, this is a mistake, it was just a mistake. And then after a while, like, I think Tim said something to the effect of, how many grains of sand make a mound or a pile or something?
Oh, that's, well, that, see, I missed that part.
Yeah, he basically said, how many grains of sand make a pile of sand? To the point where it's like, okay, how many mistakes are you going to make before there's a pile as high as the desk over here on one side? Because every time it was like, well, that was probably a mistake. Well, that was probably a mistake. It's always a mistake.
And you want to see something here? You want to talk about the bias? Just think about what you're bringing up right there. How many grains of sand, but until it becomes a dune? You know, you look at these people who are sitting there, and even if they think that they have only the best of intentions, this is the progressive mindset.
Yep.
It is purely ideological to think that you can sit there and micromanage humanity. Mm-hmm. And then even if you have the best of intentions, at the end of the day, you are sitting with a mountain of mistakes that have only compounded what you believed to be the original problem.
Yeah, and then just like this resolution, which we'll get into now, it's a perfect segue, even though I really feel like more time could be dedicated to this, Frank. But just like this resolution, to your point, it got so, there were so many victim classes added to it that it became useless. It's like the same thing. Like they
you're talking about with Omar.
Yeah, but like it's almost the same thing as like what you're saying right now. With like policing humanity, because after a while there's no one left. You know what I'm saying? Like
No, I totally understand, and there's a lot to be said on this for sure.
Yeah, so we'll segue into Omar, because I think you're going to have a... I haven't heard your show because I've been so ridiculously busy, so I haven't listened to you in a while. Please don't hate me.
Listen, everybody's got lives and work, and I understand where we're all at right now.
So we've got about 20 minutes, or a little longer if you want to go a little longer. I'm sure no one would be upset, right, guys?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So they one of the main reasons that Laura Loomer was booted off of Twitter was for showcasing a tweet of Omar's that was anti-Semitic and saying, this woman hates Jews. She's anti-Jew. She's anti-Semitic. She's serving in office for our country. And I still wonder, because this was brought up in the Tim Pool interview too, whether or not she was banned for sharing a tweet with anti-Semitism in it. In other words, like the anti-Semitism in Ilhan Omar's tweet broke Twitter's rules, so she was banned for it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that would be really interesting to find out, and they didn't talk about her at all. But so she's done this over and over and over again, and it's very clear that she despises, Israel. She despises Jews. She's got it out for them. Like, she wishes that they didn't exist, got it out for them. So the Democrats started running into problems as this hit a fever pitch where people were saying she sits on the Foreign Services Committee or the Foreign Affairs Committee, Frank, right? I mean, she's literally making policy.
Yes, she is.
And she's got CARE escorting her to her office on the Capitol. I mean, what the f- is going on?
Well, I have a lot of mixed feelings on this, Tracy. So I'm going to try to unpack this carefully. Okay. First and foremost, to hell with Ilhan Omar. To hell with her. All right. And the rest of her, the freshman radicals at that. Her bigotry, her thoughts, her feelings, they come from her religious and her cultural roots. Okay. She cares about American culture just as little as she cares about the existence of a Jewish state or that a Jewish state may have influence, undue influence on American, life. If anything, the Israeli lobby represents a direct competition for organizations like La Raza or CARE. That's the whole thing here. But the base issue, as far as the boycott or something, that's completely different to me. Boycotting, I believe, is a right. If Citizens United tells us that spending money is free speech, then withholding money is free speech as well. But for example, I really want to be careful with this. There is no reason why hurricane emergency funds, this really got me confused. If we're going to make them available at all, hurricane emergency funds, there's no reason why they can be denied to American citizens if they've expressed displeasure with our political relationship with Israel. And that happened with Hurricane Harvey.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that.
So it's things like this is what I'm talking about. So when I see Islamist plants like Omar getting Republicans and Democrats to band together so vociferously on behalf of Israel, my God, I think to myself, she might as well be Mossad. You know, it's like.
Please keep your train of thought, but I think we need to get this out there before we keep going, because there is a violent like argument that goes on in our circles about Zionism and Jews and what they do in the media and who controls things and blah, blah, blah. And the whole like Jews own the United States. And you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
I don't want to get into it. I don't know enough about it. I'm not educated enough about it. I don't want to take a position either way, nor do I want either one of us to deal with hate mail and people getting angry that either we're taking up for Jews or we're against Jews. I just want to get it out there. We're having a discussion, okay? Yep. Do you think that's a good idea to do?
Yeah, no, I think that there's something. Okay, let me put you this way. First of all, with Zionism and all that, I know all the theories. I know the history that backs up the theories. I know all that stuff. But I approach this in a way where I don't have to get knee deep into the history to be able to sell it to somebody, to be able to then talk about a solution. All right, to trying to uproot any kind of foreign interference in American life, no matter where it comes from. I am of a principled mindset where if we just concentrate on securing our money, and of course with media, you can say that the Jews own the media and they're all in Hollywood. We have plenty of people talking that way, but media is being decentralized. You have Steven Spielberg trying to get Netflix, you know, not considered for Academy Awards because, you know, the club is getting. Club membership is becoming a little bit more dispersed here. You and I doing this right now, we are not controlled by any kind of foreign government. And meanwhile, we have, you know, great listenership. People on the internet have far better viewership than anything that is going on television, which used to be the only place to get whatever. So you talk about control.
Better than CNN.
Oh, absolutely. So, but here's the thing. When it comes down to Omar and boycotting Israel and all this stuff, it's like having Ahmadinejad from Iran talking about 9/11 truth at the UN years ago.
Yeah.
You know, could there be a useful discussion here to be had about 9/11 truth? Perhaps. But should this man be given brownie points for leading the conversation? Hell no. Check, please. Get my car around from the valet. So, let me just say once again, she's an Islamist. The only thing I brought for this conversation today was a definition I had come to understand about Muslim versus Islamist. Islamism is not a form of the Muslim faith, as some people have told me, or an expression of Muslim piety. It is rather a political ideology that strives to derive legitimacy from Islam. Now, I would argue that it derives legitimacy from fundamentalist interpretation of holy texts, which is the basis of Islam.
Right, because it depends on how you interpret what Prophet was saying, right? I mean,
right. But Omar over here, she's an apologist for ISIS defectors. Mm. She has petitioned judges for leniency for ISIS members who want to come and return to the U.S. She may be an immigration and marriage fraudster, and she is a direct result of mass importation of hundreds of thousands of Somalian refugees who have turned Minneapolis, Minnesota into little Mogadishu.
Yeah. Okay.
And let me also just bring this up, because we've talked about this at the southern border as well. It was not Somalian immigration. This was government and NGO trafficking. And it's all the same organizations and churches that are involved in the scheme at the southern border that are involved in this case here, too. I covered it the other night as well. But her politics, Omar in particular, they are rooted in her background, not traditions of American foreign and not traditional American foreign policy. Because let me just tell you, I have no problem with American Jews or Israelis. And I call many my friends, but I want aid completely cut to everyone.
I agree.
That includes Israel. I think that they are a thriving Western democracy with regional allies, and they need to get along without us. Everyone does at this point. But that shared disdain for American culture that people like Omar have is why progressives have consistently allied themselves with Islam and other groups like that, CARE, La Raza, whatever the hell it is. The only problem is that progressives tend to sign away their futures for political dominance in the now. And they have always been, they've always had to pay very embarrassing prices. And they have radicals in their party that they cannot control.
Wow, that is poignant. I mean, I almost want you to talk about it again, because I'm a little like, this is not my place. Like, this is not where I am. Okay. You are very, very good at this kind of thing, and I'm not so good at it. So let's regress for a second. When you were just going over the definition, you know, of Islamist.
Islamist.
So what is Ilhan Omar technically, and where is this coming from? Is this a debate that's being had like someplace that I'm not seeing?
Okay, you know what? The other night, I was listening. I was reading an article from PJ Media, and it was talking about the unbelievable amount of Somalian gang violence that is going on in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Because pretty much the whole idea of refugee, you know, we're talking about the immigration of the 20th century, the Irish, the Italian, the Poles, Jews, whatever the hell it is. They came here. They were immigrants. Now, you're coming into a new place. You immigrate illegally, and still you have your problems. We know that there is organized crime in Italian and Irish and Jewish circles. We know about Meyer Lansky. We know about Lucky Luciano and Al Capone and everybody. We know what's going on there. We know about the Valentine's Day massacre. I mean, that was between the Irish and the Italians in Chicago. So, you know, there's so much going on here. But the thing is that they were immigrants.
They're refugees.
They were not refugees. And they were not. And what is this whole thing about Somalian refugees? Why the hell? Who out there, unless you're stupid or else you have malicious intent, can call themselves a humanitarian and say, we need to take hundreds of thousands of people out of Somalia and get them into Idaho as fast as possible?
We were talking earlier today. I was talking with someone about this and why they picked Minnesota.
I don't know.
I mean, it's weird.
But that's what they go to Idaho, Minnesota,
Ohio,
Maine. They don't know where to put the Somalis in Maine. They're putting them into Maine.
There's a video that came out the other day by this gentleman. He's standing in front of a bunch of new construction wearing like a fluorescent yellow jacket. I don't know if it was from West Virginia. And I haven't been able to verify this, but this man is passionately talking about how behind him used to stand a bunch of Section 8, I guess what would be Section 8 housing. Section 8 is like, in New York anyway, Section 8 housing is like assisted living for, you know, minorities and lower income people and stuff. And he's standing in front of there saying that all of those people were kicked out of those buildings and made to move down the road. Some of them are homeless and don't even have homes because on taxpayer dollars, they demolished them. They're now building a huge, like $27 million or something dollar complex in there, fixed with a mosque for Somali refugees to come and live in West Virginia in that community. There's thousands of them coming.
Tracy, it's the same exact NGOs, the same churches, the same faith-based initiatives that we see going on, engaging in taxpayer-funded human trafficking at the southern border as well. They are creating the same kind of cultural clashes, and they're balkanizing the United States in the same way that it is being done in Sweden and all over Europe. It's the same exact thing.
Scary.
And in Minnesota, the 5th district where hundreds of thousands of Somalians are, that's Omar's district. They got their own representative in Congress now.
I mean, yeah, and that's the thing is like, her ideology and what she believes in doesn't belong here. And I'm not saying that to be, you know, it just doesn't belong here. It is the antithesis of what America was founded on. Like, people like that, you know, they just shouldn't, they're not, you know what I'm saying? Like,
it's because it was imported. It's not because Omar was a Somalian who looked around Somalia and said, you know what, this doesn't feel right. I want the dream that is America. I'm a faithful, you know, I have my Muslim faith, but I believe in the Constitution. I want to learn that history. I want to become American. It's one thing to immigrate. It's another thing to be imported. And this is what is being going on. And this is where the whole thing comes up, because like I said before, her stance is on Jews and Israel and all that stuff. It is mostly culturally rooted. There's a well-defined place for people to make arguments that we need to back off our alliances, our financial and political alliances, and actually start embodying what Thomas Jefferson once said, you know, and George Washington, friends, neighbors, merchants with all, entangling alliances with none.
Yeah.
And we are in nothing but entangled alliances. And you don't have to go into conspiracy theories to be able to sell this. And you don't have to go into theories and all that stuff to be able to rectify it either. We need to cut cords. Only thing is that those very important conversations that should be had are being muddled by people like Omar,
yep,
who are now associating the idea of us maybe stepping back of our relationship with countries like Israel. They're now making that directly associated with hating Jews. Because she actually does.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is like I use this as almost a teaching moment to kind of move on is that we're witnessing, Frank, aside from this in-depth, you know, perspective you have from more of a surface level strategic standpoint as conservatives, we're witnessing, or libertarians, we're witnessing them destroying themselves from within. And you know, they need and must have a victim class in order to continue, right? So they've created all these victim classes within the left, like whether you're gay or you're transgender or you're black or you're Hispanic or you're an immigrant or whatever, the list goes on. And then they you know, it's gotten to the point where those victim groups are fighting amongst one another about who is more privileged. And then we have this power struggle going on at the same time as this freshman class of extremists is brought in. And the whatever the engine is behind this extremism that's taking over the left has successfully made it so that their voices are, sort of amplified, I think, almost disingenuously. Like, I don't feel like they deserve the amplification they've gotten, right? Because I don't feel like the majority of middle Americans and even liberals, classic liberals or Democrats, believe the same things as these people believe, and they've somehow been able to successfully strip power from the people that are supposed to try to keep it all in check. Does this make sense, or am I rambling?
No, it does. And like I said, this is part of the choices that they've made. They looked at ideas. Hey, let's open up the borders. Let's try to kill the electorate. Let's steal a couple of elections. Let's hold people down until we actually do change the electorate, and we don't need to actually steal elections anymore. There will be no way for people to overcome what we have created. Only problem is that progressives don't look more than 5 feet down the road.
Yeah.
And now they're paying in the most embarrassing of ways. And like I said before, they have radicals in their party they can't control. They create phobias. They create the illusions of phobias and rampant sexism and all that stuff. They are anti-religion. They are anti-God. They are pro-abortion. They are knee-deep in gender politics and transgender this and LGBT. Everything is about sex and sex and sexuality. But they're also... they've also hitched their wagon to Islam because they believe that that could be used as a really, you know, oppressor, oppressed relationship as well. But now, like we're seeing in places like the UK, where Muslims are protesting LGBT indoctrination of small children, we are just approaching a phase in the plan where these interests are going to collide in big ways. Compromises that were made to take over societies, Western society in particular, to destroy native culture, are now going to be getting ready for a head-on collision with the people that they made really bad deals with.
It's actually really an interesting time to be alive here and to watch this happening, because there's, again, it's going to be the downfall. It's not going to be fun to watch, that's for sure, but it's going to be the downfall of it. I was going to say something during the, you know, you're talking about like transgenderism and all of that, and during the interview with Tim Pool, they were talking about the research that was done into the suicide rate amongst transgendered people when they are attacked or misgendered or whatever. And I'm thinking to myself, like, you're now policing an entire platform of millions upon millions upon millions of people for less than 2% of the world's population.
Yeah. And it's because every vote counts for these crooks. They have no good ideas. They need to be able to put together their pie. These are all slices. They look at 2%. They look at 5% with the gay community. They look at 13% with the black community. They say 5 + 13 + 2 + what? How can we get ourselves to 51%? That is all they care about. Only problem is that you're going to see. You look at, you know, Brandon Strock for a second over with Walkaway. I mean, how many more gay people are going to keep voting for liberals when they see now in places like the UK, where you have these hashtag refugees welcome, and they're telling you, we are never going to change. You better start changing yourself.
And it's like they just ignored it before, and now it's knocking on their door. It's knocking right on their door.
Yeah, but listen, this is the party of people who, you know, every couple of months, a couple of them go out and they go for a bike ride across the Middle East to show everybody how not everybody in the world
get killed.
Yeah, they go out there to show everybody. No, listen, there is no hate. There's only hugs. No hate, only hugs. And then they have no head. You know, it's just the world is parsed up in very, very different ways. And they're completely brainwashed people. And I think that it's going to be very hard to stay in that state of brainwash soon because.
Well, I mean, look at what they seriously, like, and the brainwashing is so clear because they couldn't just write a resolution. There's a lot of money from the Jewish left going into the coffers of those politicians. OK, it's a big deal. There's been a lot of talk about how it is that we can, like, there's a big Jewish leftist contingent that they all have a lot of money and they're all pouring money into the coffers of these people. But you can see that the Pelosi and establishment left of the world were so afraid to offend anyone that they ended up basically watering down their, like, there were pygmies included on this list. I mean, really, like, everybody in the world is looking at this saying these people are idiots. Like,
yeah. And like I said before, and because of their approach and because of the allegiances that they have made in the past that are coming down to bite them in the asses, Now it's making a very legitimate question about what American foreign policy should look like and how we should actually become America again. And not have the 51st, 52nd, 53rd states all over the place in the Middle East or wherever the hell they are. And that conversation is becoming more impossible now than ever. And you're actually going to allow the more virulent conspiracy theorists of the world to dictate that that conversation.
Well, yes and no. I mean, the conversation can be had that way in the halls of Congress, but ultimately the power rests with the commander in chief, right? So what does Trump's withdrawing of those troops from Syria and his non-interventionalist foreign policy talk? And then how does that square with the I'm going to build the embassy in Jerusalem and I'm going to meddle and say what the capital of Israel is? Like, I just that part of things kind of bothers me. Like, I don't get the alliance there. I don't understand. I know people are going to hate me or I'm afraid to talk about this, Frank. It's so polarized.
Well, listen, here's the thing. First of all, it was many presidents before Trump were talking about moving the embassy to Jerusalem, and they didn't do it. Trump knew that if he was going to get elected, that the evangelical base is going to look really, really closely about what's going on with Israel, because the Christian evangelicals, I mean, these are people who look at Israel and many people in the country. They don't really look at our relationship with Israel from any other standpoint of biblical. You know, yeah. if we grow up, we go, you know, whether you're Catholic or whatever the hell it is, you just know Jews and Israel go together and they were there since biblical times. That's thousands of years ago. That is the most fundamental understanding that people have, and that is just what most of the logic boils down to. I believe that it has to be the same thing with Trump as well. I think that it's just a lot of people trying to do the right thing or whatever the hell it is. I don't know.
A lot of people are saying, though, like with Kushner and Ivanka and all of that noise, like he had some sort of influence on all of this, and you know, who Kushner's father was. And I think that those are really honest questions that we need to talk about.
No, they are. They are. I don't deny any of it. You know, I'm not a denier of any of this stuff. I would rather see the mess cleaned up as uncontroversially as possible and allow people to write their own books. You know, write your own history books. Tell people what was going on during the time that we were entangled with Israel or what was going on, you know, in the world since World War One or whatever the hell was going on. I would rather the history books be written after we cut off our ties from the entire world with the foreign aid and giving military technology to people and just concentrate on America again. I don't care. I'm not an anti-Semite at all, but...
Well, I think that's
Omar shit gets me.
I know. And, you know, the scary thing is that some people would say you are an anti-Semite for saying that. But screw them.
No. Well, listen, my defense in that would be I have faith in Israel.
Yeah.
To be able to prop themselves up. They have regional allies. They are technologically on the cutting edge.
Yeah.
Okay. They take care of, you know, they have more border security than we do. You know, so that's my whole thing. I'm not saying cut them loose. I'm saying that they don't need the training wheels anymore. They are perfectly capable.
I always questioned why we're sending so many, what is it, billions of dollars to Israel every year. Like, what are we getting in return for that? We get a stable ally over there. I mean, that's important. A very powerful one at that, too. But we shouldn't have to pay for that. Outside of that, like, one of the other things that kind of tie into this is, at CPAC, there was a foreign policy kind of panel, and I got a lot of heat in my comment section on YouTube about CPAC. Like, how could you say that you like CPAC? They're a bunch of neoconservative Zionists and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh my gosh, guys, this is just getting ridiculous. Like, I'm like, I went there, I saw Jim Jordan, I saw Matt Gaetz, I saw Mark Meadows, I saw Tom Fitton, I saw Brandon, I saw Candace, I saw Charlie, I saw Michelle Malkin, Sarah Carter, Kellyanne Conway. I saw all of these brilliant speakers, and I saw a foreign policy panel where there was a non-interventionalist former CIA high-level guy, I forget his name, and someone else who was of the former, the neoconservative bent, which is what CPAC always was, Frank. It was always war, 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 always.
And now they have non-interventionists starting to rear their heads.
Not only did they rear their heads, but the audience went wild. All of the people at CPAC thought that the neoconservative was scary and that the non-interventionalists saying, let's get these people out of here. How long before we realize this isn't working? Enough is enough. How many more years? And then the neoconservative saying, well, we need them there so that nothing happens. That's just it. It's ridiculous. It was
that's like Lindsey Graham saying that we can't bring home our troops from Syria until we know that American citizens are safe, when the only American citizens that are endangered by the war in Syria are our troops in Syria.
I know that a lot of people have arguments with this, but the blowback from being there in the first place for people here. There are people here that have fled those countries.
Yeah. So
anyway.
That's just it. I mean, so the Omar thing is multi-pronged for me because I think it exposes more mass migration scheming that's going on with these NGOs and these faith-based initiatives, and it's all taxpayer-funded. It's creating balkanization. It is giving congressional seats to people who are culturally opposed to American life.
Yeah. I mean, they talk about Sharia law and how that's going to be practiced here. And it's scary what's happening.
Tracy, the other day, we got to wrap it up because my parking is going to expire. But 2 days ago in Indonesia, there was a headline about, you know, six couples or whatever that were caned because of sex before marriage or because people of the opposite sex were just in a room of somebody of the opposite sex. And I'm thinking to myself, I said, you know, this is unbelievable here. Indonesia is the most populous Muslim country in the world. And of the seven countries that were designated by the Obama administration as failed states and sponsors of terror that Donald Trump put the 90-day travel ban on, only one of those countries were in the top 10 most populous countries in the world for Muslim population. And that was Iran.
Mm.
Okay. So you're looking at this going on. I mean, this is just what those cultures have to deal with. Are they ever going to reform themselves? Are they going to evolve? Are they going to change? I don't know. But the reformation is theirs to have, not ours to give. And it's not ours to take people out of there and start creating pockets of it in our own country. Amen. You should encourage people who want something different for themselves and their children to come here and be American and practice their faith in a little bit more of a reformed, progressive way. But, you know, this is the bigger issue. There's a lot more with Omar than just saying things that can be perceived as, anti-Semitic. There's a lot more.
Yeah, there is. We'll talk about it more as the weeks go on. This was a good one, guys. This was a good one, Frank.
I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, we'll get you out of here before you get a ticket from that meter maid. You can listen to the Dark to Light podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you again next week.
Take care, everybody.
This is an Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear quick fix on Radio Influence.
This lying thing is becoming a trend. Lying is becoming a trend. It really is. Especially in the government. If somebody told the truth in the government, I think they'll get assassinated immediately. Lying is the thing. When you talk about Donald Trump basically bullying our government, to give Ivanka and his son-in-law, long-neck Jared Kushner, their security clearance, people say, well, that's his right. You know what? It is his right. Admit it. That's the problem. When he's like, no, I didn't do that. Then you find out he did it. Then you're like, well, it's his right. You don't see how that's backwards? Everything, why are you lying? Why do you lie about everything? About everything. You're hiding everything.
You can find Ian Beckles' Flavor in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.